Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
On a Tuesday, but it feels like a Monday, it is September 8th, 2026, Nativity of Our Blessed Virgin Mary, Mama Mary. We'll talk more about that in 2 cents this morning in the second hour of the program, but a beautiful feast day in the One Holy Catholic and Apostolic Church. And so great to be back on the air with you, and I hope you had a wonderful Labor Day weekend. And it's interesting, isn't it? Labor Day, we celebrated yesterday, a federal holiday, and yet we use it as a day of rest. But that's okay, because we recognize, as we said on the program yesterday, the dignity of the worker and the human person. So I hope you did get a chance to rest and maybe go to a Labor Day parade somewhere in your community, or just enjoy more time with your family as we marked the unofficial end of summer. Of course, we have a few weeks left of summer on the calendar, but we know that Memorial Day is the unofficial start of summer in the States, and then we have Labor Day kind of wrapping things up for us unofficially, though, on the calendar. Coming up officially today on our calendar for Catholic Connection, we have Bill Donahue, of course, a president of the Catholic League. He's joining us from the Big Apple, and of course, this week will mark the 25th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks on the United States of America. And there are a number of rallies happening leading up to the big event on Friday, which will mark that 25-year anniversary. And Bill is going to be at one or two of those rallies today. And there's also been a big push to try to get the mayor, Mondani, not to speak or present himself at these rallies. The latest voice to join in is the former mayor of New York City, Rudy Giuliani. We'll have a story about that in the news. So Bill will be joining us for two segments. And then we'll wrap up on a Tuesday, as we always do, with our Newman Guide News with Kelly Solomon. There are a number of important stories we'll discuss, including the Holy Father pointing to St. John Henry Newman as a model for education. We'll also talk about another big story at the Steubenville Youth Conferences that Kelly found. Also, a new initiative at Catholic U, the Archbishop Fulton Sheen Excellence in Preaching Initiative. Now, I don't know if we'll have time for all of these stories, but we do have about 15 minutes with Kelly, so hopefully we'll get through most of them. Hour number two, after your news and your weather, Michael New joins us, Senior Associate Scholar with the Charlotte Lozier Institute. He's also with the Catholic University of America. He's got a story about how pro-abortionists are now admitting post-Dobbs the laws have not caused an increase in maternal deaths or the decrease of doctors leaving pro-life states. And then Barbara Harrington, who is a wonderful producer, screenwriter, author, she's joining us. We're going to talk about her latest book being turned into a screenplay, The Last Three Kings. So that will be a lot of fun. That is the show for today on a Monday, so hope you can stay tuned for the entire 2 hours. Weather-wise, the National Weather Service is talking about a hurricane that's forecast to pass west of Kauai today. Impacts such as high surf and heavy rain could impact all of the Hawaiian Islands. So there's a hurricane warning. Meanwhile, there's sweltering heat remaining across the south central plains and lower middle Mississippi Valley. California is still feeling the heat, as well as in the southwest this week with limited nighttime relief. Also, a big thank you for Sherry Brownrick and Vanessa Denha-Gomer for filling in for me last week. And a thank you to the ladies of the Springfield Diocese Catholic Women's Conference. I was their keynote speaker last week for their big annual conference. And what a delightful group of ladies. What a beautiful event they put on. It was an honor to serve as their keynote speaker. So thank you, ladies. Great to meet all of you. And we had a lot of fun. We laughed, we cried, and just had a great, great day. Thanks be to God. All right, it is 3 minutes past the hour. We need to get busy because it is a busy morning with the news here on EWTN's Catholic Connection. Pope Leo returning to the Shrine of Our Lady of Good Counsel in Genanzano on Monday evening to celebrate Mass and the eve of the Nativity of the Blessed Virgin Mary, and invite Christians to contemplate Our Blessed Mother's quiet presence and then become servants of peace themselves. During his homily, the Holy Father saying, "Let us allow peace to grow within us." Returning to the sanctuary, which is southeast of Rome, the Holy Father recalling he had felt a deep desire to go to that location just days after his election to the papacy last year. Mary, he said at the time, had accompanied him throughout his life with her maternal presence, with her wisdom, and with the example of her love for her son, the son who was always at the center, he said, of his faith. Now celebrating the vigil of Mary's birth last night, he said he was once again entrusting to Mary what is still born in this poor and magnificent humanity, fragile like a shoot, but a sign of God's faithfulness. The Pope's homily focusing on the apparent paradox of Mary's place in salvation history, a woman whose life changed the course of history, yet whose presence in the gospel is marked by simplicity and silence. Russia leaving the door open to new peace talks with Ukraine. Stefan Boss with the Vatican News Department reports this following a week of intense American diplomacy with major obstacles remaining to ending the war, now in year number five.
Moscow said Monday it does not rule out renewed peace talks involving Russia, Ukraine and the United States. Heard through an interpreter, Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov spoke after U.S. envoy Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner held talks with Russian President Vladimir Putin in Moscow and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in Kiev. Following their talks in Moscow, Kushner and Witkoff traveled to Kiev by train from Poland, with Zelensky saying Russian strikes had prevented them from flying into the Ukrainian capital. Russia and Ukraine had agreed to refrain from striking each other's capitals during the American delegation's visits. The Kremlin described Saturday's talks with Putin as highly useful, while the American envoys called their subsequent discussions with Zelensky encouraging.
In other news this morning, a mistrial was formally declared on Friday in the Lindsey Clancy murder trial in the state of Massachusetts. Plymouth County District Attorney Timothy Crew saying, though, at this point, no formal decision has been made yet about retrying that case.
Decisions made today regarding that. I'm going to be meeting with our team, and we will address this case further at the appropriate time in the context of an official court proceeding.
Crews also said, however, he thought it was a very clear-cut case.
The facts are Lindsey Clancy killed her three children, and the evidence suggested to us that she was in control of her actions when she committed those homicides.
The mistrial declaration came after the defense's appeal to a higher court to block it and was denied. The jury Friday told the judge once again they were deadlocked, prompting him to declare the mistrial before giving the defense an honor to appeal it. Clancy admitted to killing her three children back in 2023, but she did plead not guilty by reason of insanity. She claims she suffered from postpartum psychosis. Prosecutors arguing the killings were premeditated. A status hearing is now set for September 29th. And former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani urging the current mayor of New York, Zohran Mamdani, not to attend Friday's 9/11 remembrance ceremony. Giuliani said in an interview with Newsmax that he is offended that Mamdani is coming, saying that the current mayor does not agree that September 11th was an Islamic terrorist attack on the United States. A petition circulated by some 9/11 victims' families urging the current mayor to reconsider has now drawn over 100,000 signatures. And Tammy Trujillo tells us a New York City firefighter has died of World Trade Center-related illness just days before the 25th anniversary.
Retired FDNY Lieutenant Gerald Riley of Ladder 22 died last Thursday. The Uniformed Firefighters Association says Riley was a devoted husband, father, and grandfather and showed unwavering dedication during rescue and recovery operations at Ground Zero. He died at the age of 75. The Never Forget Project says that 343 firefighters were killed on 9/11. Over 100 have died of World Trade Center-related injuries or illness, and thousands more are now sick. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
And this year's 9/11 remembrance ceremony in Lower Manhattan will include a new moment of silence and bell toll on what marks the 25th anniversary of the terror attacks. In the past, there have been six moments of silence during the summer ceremony, but 9/11 Memorial and Museum President Beth Hillman says there will be another one to honor the service and sacrifice for all those who have passed away from 9/11-related health effects.
And that's many more than the people killed on 9/11 itself. It's an important opportunity for us to pull closer to us and pull to the 9/11 commemoration itself.
The added moment of silence will happen after the reading of the names of the victims. Tens of thousands of first responders, construction workers, and others have become ill with cancers and other health issues, and many have died. One of the wealthiest school districts in New Jersey is being sued over its school records gender and name change policy. The Chatham School District does allow guidance counselors to decide whether and to what extent student parents should be informed about their children's gender and name choices. That includes their decisions about which bathrooms and locker rooms to use. Moms for America, Moms for Liberty, and several parents of young girls are suing, claiming the parents' constitutional due process rights are being violated. Mountain Rescue Aspen says it has responded now to two climbing deaths near Aspen in less than a week. The chief rescue leader, Jeff Edelson, says the Elk Mountains are known for loose, unstable rock.
If we look back at our historical data, unfortunately, we do have a couple of deaths a year on average in our range. Sometimes they're clumped together like these were. Sometimes they're spread out through the summer.
A climber dying on Sunday after falling from Castle Peak just days after another climber was killed in a fall from Maroon Peak. The climber's name has not been released. Rescue officials are urging climbers to know their limits, prepare for changing conditions, and leave a detailed route plan with someone before heading into the backcountry. Mark Mayfield tells us the NTSB recovering the flight data and audio recorders from the deadly plane crash at Miami's International Airport.
Speaking Monday from Miami, NTSB Chairwoman Jennifer Homendy said her agency is determined to get to the bottom of what happened.
We are deeply, deeply committed to our duty, our responsibilities to determine how this accident occurred, why it happened.
Five people were killed and five others injured when an Amazon cargo plane went off the runway while landing Sunday afternoon. The Boeing 767 was coming in from Puerto Rico. Homendy said it struck a van with several people inside, then struck a Toyota Corolla while sliding 1,500 feet past the paved surface. Homendy gave condolences to the families who lost their loved ones in the incident. I'm Mark Mayfield.
A coastal flood advisory remaining in place for larger portions of Southern California. Over the weekend, multiple coastal communities were inundated with seawater as the tail end of a tropical storm pushed waves into the shore. Powerful waves are now combining with high tides to cause minor flooding in various parts of Southern California. And that will be the case, they say, until later this evening. And it's primary day in New Hampshire. Voters heading to the polls to decide who's moving forward in races for Senate, also the House there, and governor. The Senate race is getting the most attention, with Democratic Senator Jeanne Shaheen not seeking re-election, leaving the seat open. Congressman Chris Pappas has emerged as a Democratic frontrunner, with John E. Sununu has the benefit of strong statewide recognition on the Republican side. And Sarah Lee Kessler tells us about a flight attendant from Indiana who's being credited with rescuing a baby on a plane bound from New Jersey to Michigan.
Monique Harris caught the two-month-old as she was slipping from her exhausted mother's lap midair last week on a United flight from Newark to Grand Rapids. Harris, who's in her 50s, not only had quick reflexes but lots of empathy, letting the new mom nap while she held the baby during the flight. A United passenger shot video, uploaded it to social media, and naturally, it's gone viral. Harris getting a lot of praise and United getting a lot of suggestions that she deserves a pay raise. I'm Sarah Lee Kessler.
It feels like a Monday, but it's a Tuesday. It's September 8th, 2026. We love being with you here daily on Catholic Connection, Monday through Friday. And we have a great lineup, as always, for you. Coming up right after the break this morning, we have the dynamic Bill Donahue. Look forward to chatting with him about events in New York City related to the 9/11 anniversary, including events he's actually attending. He'll tell us all about that. And then we're also going to get our education update from Kelly Solomon and the Cardinal Newman Society. We'll be right back on a Tuesday, which feels like a Monday. Stay tuned. Up here, Tuesday is going beautifully. It is Tuesday, September 8th already. Great to be with you on Catholic Connection, coast to coast and around the globe on EWTN. Always great to have Bill Donahue, head of the Catholic League, with us. He's very involved in events this week in New York City regarding the anniversary of the 9/11 terrorist attacks. And Bill, I know that you were describing your location. Share that with our listeners. They know you're in Manhattan, but your view this morning is very important. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, I'm looking, I'm on the 34th floor on the corner of 34th and 7th across the street from Macy's and Penn Station and Madison Square Garden. As I'm speaking to you now, I'm looking directly at the Freedom Tower. That's the site of where the Twin Towers were. And it's a very clear day. I mean, they knew what they were doing. September, you tend to get these very wonderful days. And it reminds me of that fateful day of what happened. I'm sitting here, and one of the members of the staff members screamed, and I looked out the window, and I saw this big gash, this near the top of one of the towers, and I just thought it might have been a Cessna or something like that. And people went back to work. It's around 8:50 in the morning, as I remember. And then I heard him scream again, and I looked out the window, and I saw, I didn't see the plane go through, but I saw the second one. I did see it hit. And at that point, I knew we were at war. And I knew who was doing it, radical Muslims. There was not any question in my mind. We later found out about what happened in Western Pennsylvania and in and at the Pentagon. But yeah, we lost almost 3,000 people that fateful day, and I'm proud to be part of some rallies today about it.
So tell us about the rallies and your involvement.
Well, the first rally will be at noon on the steps of City Hall. I just got it confirmed here this morning, just about a half an hour ago. The 9/11 families, people who have lost their loved ones, they don't want the mayor Mondani to be at the event. I don't want him either. I wrote a letter on August the 3rd, 6 pages long, explaining why he doesn't belong there. He's a divisive figure, and he has a track record of not marching with veterans and with the Jews in the Salute to Israel parade. It's easy for him to back out of here because he's a divisive figure. He's not going to do it. You know, we just figured we could take a little bit of the shine off of him. And so we're working with the 9/11 families. They're going to be there with Bruce Blakeman. He's the Nassau County executive, where I live on Long Island, and he's running for governor against Kathy Hochul. We're going to be there with Sid Rosenberg, the famous WABC radio host, and a group of other dignitaries at a press conference. That's at noon on steps of City Hall. 6 p.m., I moved downtown New York, down by the Chinatown area, in front of the DSA, Democratic Socialist of America headquarters in New York City at 14 Jefferson Street. And that group is sponsored by End Jew Hatred. They invited me to speak last May outside of Gracie Mansion, the home of Mondani, to protest his anti-Semitic rhetoric, inflammatory policies, and staff members. And so I'm going to join the same group tonight, and I will be speaking. Basically the one lone Catholic voice, that's fine with me. Mostly Jewish Americans at this one tonight. The one at 9/11 will be a mix of everybody. So, and quite frankly, there will be others too at the one at 6 o'clock, because when I spoke in May, we had people from the Hindu community, some Africans and the like. But in any event, we're all calling attention to Mamdani and to DSA. The hatred of America is palpable. I probably am one of the very few people to have read the 375-page report put out by Mamdani here a couple of months ago about racial equity in New York City. It reads like a radical tract, a left-wing full of hate about America and what a rotten country we are. So I know the way they think. After all, I studied sociology, so I kind of know the way these people think.
Talking with our friend Bill Donahue of the Catholic League, who will be attending a number of events today and all week long, coming up to the anniversary, 25 years since the terrorist attacks. Now, we were talking during the break, Bill. I know you're a friend and you know Rudy Giuliani, the former New York City mayor, very well. You said you went to the same grade school. He actually did an interview over the weekend on Newsmax, and he said that he's so offended about Mondani still planning to come on Friday for the events, saying the current mayor doesn't agree that the September 11th attacks were an Islamic terrorist attack on the United States of America. How could he not say that? I mean, how can Mondani make that statement, given the facts? Given the facts.
Well, Giuliani is correct, as usual. I've known him. I've worked with him for years. Yes, we went to the same elementary school. He's a few years older than me, so we didn't even know each other at St. Anne's in Garden City. But look, he stood by me with the Brooklyn Museum of Art, Giuliani, and so many other things we've worked together with over the years. He's not exaggerating. I mean, Mondani keeps talking about, well, when it happened, when something happened that day. What do you mean
something happened
that day? Can't you actually articulate exactly who did it and for what? We all know that. It's not a matter of, it's not contested. Why is he reluctant? And then he keeps talking about, well, I was concerned about Islamophobia. You weren't concerned about the attack on America? You're concerned about Islamophobia. Then he threw in his aunt and said that she was afraid to wear a hijab in New York after what happened. Well, that was his cousin, wasn't his aunt. His aunt was in Tanzania. We have pictures of her, and she wasn't wearing hijab. So he lied about that to make a cheap point. We're not worried about phobia. A phobia is an irrational fear. I don't have an irrational fear of Muslims. I do have a rational fear of radical Muslims, as I would radical any group in our society, of any demographic group, because they're a threat to freedom. And so he doesn't belong there. If you don't believe in what happened, you can't name what happened. This wasn't some guys who got lost, like I thought, maybe a Cessna hit or something like that. Maybe the guy was high on drugs or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Then I realized, no, this is an attack in the name of radical Islam, and we're suffering innocent people as a result of it, and he can't bring himself to say it. So I'm going to make clear that when I speak tonight at the End Jew Hatred rally down in front of a DSA headquarters, because they feel the same way. Their poster boy is Mamdani and Hassan Piker, so we know the way they think.
Yeah, it's totally ridiculous based on the facts and all the investigations that took place. Now, did you ever think back, that was 25 years ago, and we all remember where we were if we're old enough to be remember, of course, 9/11, as many of us are. Did you ever think, looking back, when you were just describing where you were, what you saw in your office, that we would be in this position today, not only in New York City, but across the country with these extreme lefters that are very open about how they hate everything about America?
No. And my doctorate in sociology, and I've studied Marx. He's one of the three, Weber and Durkheim being the other titans. So you have to understand what's going on, because I had to read everything. And I know the way they think. And I've dealt with these people all my life. But I never thought I would get to the point where it's at today, where now they're no longer on the fringe. They're moving toward the center and taking over the Democratic Party. I think it's open for question whether or not they'll succeed. Fortunately, there are people like Tom Suozzi, whom I know, a Democrat from New York, who's a good man, and others are trying to fight back. But I don't see the fighting coming from Schumer, which is really, when you think of it, Chuck Schumer is has been for years a well-respected Democrat leader, but he's allowed the AOC wing to take over. And so now he's been sidelined. I'm not even sure he's going to run in 2028, but besides that fact, the hatred, though, that's out there, it's expressed all the time about America. And, you know, I'm a veteran of the United States Air Force, honorably mm-hmm. discharged in 1970. So it doesn't sit well with me when I see these people burning the flag and cheering for Hamas and Hezbollah and the Houthis. That's exactly what they're cheering for. They're cheering for the terrorists. And I went on the DSA website this morning. I saw all the attacks on Israel and the support for Hamas. It's right there. It's not my opinion. Anybody can just go check it right out. So this is what we're dealing with. It's a real threat to America and indeed to Western civilization.
Mamdani, when he showed up in a few places, especially in Staten Island. Now, Staten Island does tend to lean a little bit more right, more conservative than most other areas of New York. But read the room. He's not doing a very good job of reading the room. He's not welcome at these events.
Well, he's not. And God bless the Italians, mostly Italians, not exclusively. But they're the ones leading it in Staten Island. Many of the Italians moved from Brooklyn to Staten Island. The Irish moved from the Bronx out to Long Island and different parts. So, they're a tough core out there. And Vito Pasella, whom I know and I've worked with over the years, they have a lot of good people out there. I wish the other boroughs were as strong as Staten Island, but they're not. The two worst, number one, Brooklyn, and number two, Manhattan.
Yeah.
After that, you get Queens and the Bronx kind of in the middle.
Bill, when we come back, we have to take a break and
sure.
talk to you about the CBC, Canadian Broadcasting, facing controversy after telling reporters they can't refer to 9/11 or use the word terror or terrorist. We'll be right back. Always great to have Bill Donahue with us. Dr. Bill Donahue, president of the Catholic League, noted speaker, sociologist, and just a great, great Catholic, and someone we love having on because he's so well informed about all things Catholic and world news. Concentrating today on, of course, the anniversary of 9/11. He lives and was raised and still lives and works in New York City, and talking about where he's going to be today, the number of different rallies. Okay, this story, as someone with a journalism degree and someone who talks about media all the time, just drove me up the wall and really got my Italian up, and I'm sure it's going to get your Irish up. All right, this is a story from the New York Post. The Canadian Broadcast Corporation instructing its staff not to refer to the killings on 9/11 as terrorist attacks ahead of its coverage of the 25th anniversary. The public broadcaster reaffirming that it would avoid using words such as terrorist or terrorism when describing events, directing its staffers to follow a long-standing company policy that previously landed them in hot water during their October 7th coverage, of course, of the attack on Israel. Do not refer to the September 11 attacks as terrorist attacks, the memo read. Okay, Bill, this is so insulting and so ridiculous, but so typical of what's happening with our media today. Your comments.
Well, this is actually pretty extreme, even by the typical standards of what we have today. Everyone seems to be more offended, more concerned about offending Muslims and the Muslim community as opposed to offending Americans. And quite frankly, if I were a proud Muslim and an American, and I served in the armed forces the way I did, I wouldn't be happy that they think that we're so thin-skinned that you can't call a spade a spade. Everybody knows what happened. They didn't get lost that day. These people were terrorists. Now, isn't it interesting? In this country, the FBI said that if you said about pro-life Catholics who were also understood that there's a difference between a man and a woman. And they also understood that marriage was the exclusive province of a man and woman. They referred to them as domestic terrorists.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm a domestic terrorist. You're a domestic terrorist. The terrorists who hit us on 9/11, what were they, just simply drunk or something? They just got high on marijuana or something, and they crashed in there by mistake?
Yeah.
If we can't identify and diagnose, look, if a doctor, you go to a doctor and he makes the wrong diagnosis, he could actually kill you if he does the wrong operation. We have to have the right diagnosis before we can correct the problem. We have to be able to say it's not Muslims, it's radical Muslims. It's Islamist, which is radical Muslims. They hate Western civilization. They hate America. They hate Israel. They say it all the time, every day. Hassan Piker says that 9/11, we deserved it. There's no question about it. Mm-hmm. So if I don't know what's going on in Canada. I mean, they are actually gone off the rails.
Well, I guarantee you that there will be other media who are going to pick up on this. And here's their explanation. CBC defending the memo as a reminder to its journalists to adhere to the decades-old practice, claiming that using charged phrases such as terrorist attacks would diminish their ability to remain impartial. No, you just diminished your ability to remain impartial by not quoting the facts. The fact of the matter is there were numerous investigations for years. People are behind bars because they were terrorist attacks. Those involved and responsible finally came out and admitted. What more evidence do they need as journalists in Journalism 101? Who, what, where, when, why, and how, Bill? Come on, this is crazy.
Well, they seem to think that to be impartial, it's okay to lie.
Right.
That's what they are. They're lying.
Right. They're lying
right through their teeth. You know, it's interesting, too. Here I am right now, as you know, on 34th and 7th in New York. I'm here, you know, Monday through Friday, of course, and I come in at 6:45 a.m. Since I've been on the air with you, the helicopters never stop. I can hear it all over New York, and that's because of the 9/11 rally at noon and then the other one at 6 p.m., and we're getting closer to Friday, of course. They have to be on high alert. It's really that dangerous. And if we can't get a correct diagnosis, we'll never get a correct remedy. And that's what the danger is in this country and in Canada and any place else.
They're so, as you said, they're so worried about offending the extremists and the radicals. And these people did not represent, as you said eloquently, all Muslims. They're the radical in the group. And they're also offending, as you also mentioned, the victims and the families. I had a cousin who died of cancer as related to an illness from 9/11 because he was a teacher and he worked in that area right below the Twin Towers. And he, because he was right there and in the midst of all the smoke and everything else, he had cancer, was diagnosed with cancer and died. He was very young. He was only in his 40s. And so you're affecting all those people or people who worked there or lived there or any American who was so traumatized and rightly so offended by what they saw.
Well, you know, listeners might want to know this. 1 year after 9/11, after I saw what happened that day, I asked one of the guys on my staff to call the NYPD, call the FDNY, the police, the fire department, call some other authorities, and ask them, do they have any hard data on the first responders in terms of their demographic profile. I did that because every single night on TV, you could see it was one Catholic church after another.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's a lot of Irish and Italians go into these services. And they didn't have any hard data. I know the government's not allowed by law to collect information on religion. That's where you get that information from survey institutes like Gallup and the like. But in every single case, they estimated between 85 and 90% of all the first responders who died on that day, 343 of them, were Catholic.
Yeah.
And I'm going to mention that tonight to my Jewish brothers and sisters, that we're in this thing with you, too. We have another reason for it. And, you know, they say that they don't want to offend Muslims. They offend me as a veteran.
Right.
I spent 4 years in the United States Air Force.
Thank you for your service, by the way.
Yeah. For what they're doing.
Yeah.
The line.
It is just so appalling where we are in this country based on what's happened and what we have seen. And yet, based on our Constitution and the opportunities that we have for real freedom in this nation, it seems like, Bill, we just haven't learned anything after all these years.
No, and the thing is, one of the big problems that we've had beginning with the Biden era was the mass invasion. Now, forgetting about any other aspect of that, why are all these people from all over the world willing to even risk their lives and come into this country if we are such racist and sexist and homophobic and Islamophobic and everything else?
Why did they want to be here? Yeah.
Why do they want to come here? Nobody's leaving to go the other places. They keep saying Rosie O'Donnell said she went to Ireland. Then she said she's coming back. I mean, maybe they don't want her either. I don't know. But it's just crazy to me that they don't seem to get it. You know, I used to say to my students when I was a professor, I said, why is it that when you had the divided Germany, nobody from West Germany jumped over the wall to go to East Germany. They only jumped one way. Why don't you ask your other professors on this campus if they can explain that?
Yeah, or watch the film. You and I are probably old enough to remember that movie. Remember Escape from East Berlin? Remember that movie?
Yes.
It was a very, very good movie. Yeah. So what's the reality of the situation? But you know what? Common sense isn't so common anymore. And there's a reporter we used to joke around about this. There was a friend of mine who used to work in Detroit with me. He said, never let the facts get in the way of a good story. And unfortunately, that is what happened. That is the way the media present this. And I always tell people, as I did when I spoke in Illinois to a group of 300 women last week, to discern correctly and properly in terms of what you're receiving. So what are you doing Friday? I'm sure you're going to be at many of the different events on Friday.
You know, at this point, I'm not sure. Aren't the big events against what's going on with DSA and Mondani
are today?
Because we didn't want to interfere with the solemn ceremony on Friday.
Mm-hmm. On Friday, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, we'll be in touch. Go ahead, please.
One other thing here about the facts. Yeah, there is such a thing as truth. And as Daniel Patrick Moynihan once said, he said, sir, you're entitled to your opinion. You're not entitled to your own facts.
Amen, brother. Amen. Bill, you're the best. Thank you for this. And give us an update. And we'll follow you online as well at CatholicLeague.org to get the latest on those rallies today and all the events happening this week in honor of those who lost their lives in the terrorist attacks, 9/11. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you.
Great to wrap up Tuesdays with our friend Kelly Solomon from the wonderful Cardinal Newman Society. And school days. This time of year, pretty much everyone is back to school. A lot of young people head back to the classroom in various portions of the country in August, mid to late August. But now that the Labor Day weekend has passed, it's pretty much school day for everybody who is getting an education in the United States of America. But we all need to continue our education, whether we're actually going into a classroom or signing up for something online. That's why Kelly joins us, to keep us educated on what's happening. So Kelly, there's a lot of great stories related to education, and there's a beautiful one that you shared with us, and we have our Newman Guide News segment, as we always do with you, on the Holy Father pointing to St. John Henry Newman as a model for education. Tell us about that. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Teresa. Great to be with you, and so excited for all the stories we're going to cover in education this year as the school year really kicks off and students are back to their schools and their colleges and their homeschools and their hybrids and online programs. This was a really beautiful address that the Holy Father gave just on Friday, Teresa, to pilgrims from Oriel College, part of Oxford. They came to the Vatican, and Pope Leo addressed them with such a beautiful address. I love going and clicking and reading directly his short speech, but his words that he delivered directly to these educators.
So share with us some of the things he had to say.
Yes, so he welcomed them. This is the 700th anniversary of Oriel College. What I didn't realize is Oriel College, part of Oxford, was founded as the College of the Blessed Virgin Mary. It has its Catholic origin. And so he drew on that. He said, you know, Oriel has a long and illustrious history, which naturally, over such an extended period of time, has witnessed and experienced many changes, events, and upheavals. Yet the college has remained firm in its Christian identity. Your anniversary is an opportunity to celebrate its Catholic origins as the College of the Blessed Virgin Mary. And then he goes on to say, indeed, this identity is key to what has made and can continue to make Oriel College not just an academic institution, but a true community of faith and scholarship in its deepest meaning. And so he's drawing on its Catholic roots and saying that's where this college can find its true identity and what can really make it stand out and offer a true community of faith and scholarship, which is just incredible. He said the college can look with confidence to its past contributions as a sure foundation and guide for its future endeavors. So it was built on a Catholic foundation. How can they look back to those past contributions? How can they embrace that in the future? And then, of course, he goes into referencing St. John Henry Newman, who was a tutor at Oriel College, has a history with Oriel College at Oxford, and who Pope Leo holds up as an example of a scholar who showed the inseparability of faith and reason, and even more admirably in his life. Pope Leo goes on to say there was a concreteness to his ideas since his religious convictions were rooted in his personal relationship with God. While his scholarship was both sublime and eminently practical, the profound depths of both dimensions of his life were recognized in his declaration as a doctor of the Universal Church and co-patron of the Church's educational mission, which, as we've talked about, Teresa, this just happened recently that, you know, John Henry Newman was named a doctor of the Church and also co-patron of Catholic education alongside St. Thomas Aquinas. And so Pope Leo said to these leaders from Oriel College, it's providential that your anniversary celebrating 700 years of Oriel College at Oxford occurs in such close proximity to an event of such significance, referencing St. John Henry Newman's elevation, both for you and for the entire Catholic Church. What do you think, Teresa?
I just love this, and I love the fact we know that he was named a doctor of the Church and recently canonized. It's just really incredible. And I love his statements, the Pope's statements, but also the statements of John Henry Newman about the reality of the Church and the reality of life and just reality in general. I was just talking to Bill Donahue about so many people denying the reality, for example, of what happened on 9/11. And so to help people get back to the basics and understand the truth, as in, you know, the human person created in the image and likeness of God and the natural law, this is a reminder of us for the importance of that, I think.
That's a great point. And getting back to that truth, that's exactly what Pope Leo pointed out in this address when he said that they can promote an integral anthropological vision if they embrace the truth, the full truth of the Catholic Church and its teachings.
Yep, because it all goes back to the truth.
And so how wonderful that he draws these educators back to their roots. So many colleges were founded upon a Catholic mission and have wandered from that. But what is a Catholic mission offer to a college that another kind of college can offer? They're offering that integral anthropological vision that gives students such a vision for life, a whole formation for their human person that goes beyond some credential, some degree. And he ends his address by pointing to Newman's famous hymn, Lead Kindly Light.
Lead Kindly Light. I love that. I'm looking at the statement, by the way, from the Vatican website on his address to that we're talking about. You can find it online very easily. Go ahead.
Yes. It's short and it's easy to read, but it's beautiful to think. Pope Leo just gave this address just on Friday to a group of educators. What were the most important things he wanted to say? He wanted to talk about the Catholic mission that this college is founded on. And he wanted to uphold St. John Henry Newman as an example for these educators, saying he didn't separate faith and reason.
Right.
And in troubling times in his life, he wrote Lead Kindly Light, where he said, you know, essentially, I don't know what my next step should be. There are troubling things ahead. Lord, you guide me. You show me the way, and I trust in you. And so he urges these educators to entrust themselves and the future of the college to the Lord. And I think that's really beautiful. And I think that's a message that could be sent to all college leaders today. It's a very troubling time in higher education in many ways. There's this demographic cliff of not as many students going off to college as there have been in the past. There's financial challenges. There's colleges closing. 23 Catholic colleges have closed in the United States in the last 10 years. And so as colleges look towards what's the future, I think it really, really can draw a lot of inspiration from the Pope's message saying their future is in embracing their mission, that that's distinctly what they offer, and entrusting the Lord the future of their college, like St. John Henry Newman did in his own life.
Well, this story, I'm glad you brought this up, because this story, you know, probably for most people, because we're busy, and then it was a Labor Day weekend, and we want to relax, which is fine, even though it's Labor Day, doing the air quotes, so that is it's a federal holiday, and so people like to take it off, as they should. But even just some of the words of lead kindly light amid the encircling gloom, lead thou me on, the night is dark, and I am far from home. Lead thou me on, keep thou my feet. I do not ask to see the distant scene, one step enough for me. Those are a few of the lyrics of the beautiful hymn, Lead Kindly Light. And I love it when the Holy Father, or let's say a bishop or a church leader, quotes from the great faith leaders of our past, and then you read the documents from the Vatican, and there's always hyperlinks where you can go and you can find out what they're talking about, which I think is super helpful.
Exactly. And as we all learn more about St. John Henry Newman in light of his elevation of Doctor of the Church and co-patron of Catholic education, it's a great time to reflect and to pray. I love praying with some of the hymns and meditations he's written.
Mm-hmm. Right? Absolutely.
They're beautiful.
All right, another really upbeat story has to do with vocations, and this is the lasting impact. It's one of the stories you sent me, which is terrific.
Yes.
The lasting impact of Steubenville Youth Conferences.
Yes. Teresa, I'm sure you've been to these before.
Yep.
I know I attended a Franciscan University of Steubenville youth conference during my high school years, and I was just so impressed, although not shocked, that one of the most faithful Catholic colleges in the country is contributing to the formation of young priests, because a new survey from the Center for Applied Research in the Apostolate, CARA survey was released that showed 18% of the new priests ordained this year attended a Franciscan University of Steubenville youth conference during their vocational journey. And this is more than any other Catholic conference ministry in the United States.
Wow. That's a pretty big number. So did they say what it was? Was it just the environment, hearing the speakers? Did they get specific at all about the results?
Yes. You know, they shared a number of examples. They interviewed several priests who did attend a Franciscan University of Steubenville youth conference while they were young. Well, they were younger. Most people go during their high school years, and they mentioned many of the similar things. One of them was that they saw young people and priests who were so on fire for the Lord, and for those who maybe hadn't experienced it in their home parish and their home community. One priest said that was his first time seeing a priest just be passionate about the Lord and be so passionate about their faith and be passionate for souls. Another thing many of them specifically referenced was the vocations call that they do, you know, every year at the Steubenville Youth Conferences, where they stand up on the stage and they say, you know, anyone who may be considering a religious vocation is asked to stand up so they can receive a special blessing. And just that special call out, that special opportunity to say, could the Lord be calling me? A chance to give that a moment to think about is something that several of these priests referenced. Another common theme that came through was the Saturday night adoration. That's just beautiful. And the Eucharistic procession that goes through the young people. And one of the priests said he was sitting in the bleachers, one of the most uncomfortable spots, when the Eucharistic procession was going by. And I had a moment of locking eyes with the Lord in the Eucharist and had a moment of realization of grace where I knew that that was Jesus in the Eucharist. I knew he loved me. I knew I loved him. And I knew I was going to be a priest.
Wow.
How beautiful.
You know, it's interesting. Over the weekend, I was on Newsmax. They called me bright and early on Saturday morning and they said, can you come on and talk about faith in America? I said, sure, I'm happy to do that. So I go on, and there was a young influencer, I think his first name is Anthony, a Catholic influencer, who's really doing gangbuster job on social media, promoting the faith. But they were asking me about a new report that said that there are some people out there in the culture who don't believe that this resurgence in Catholicism with all these young people joining, as you just mentioned, a lot of people now interested in vocations, they don't think it's real, that it is manufactured. My response was, manufactured according to whom? And the anchor, I know the anchor, he's very nice, he's very Catholic too. I met him in the coverage of the Pope last year. And I said, manufactured according to whom? I said, you know, this past weekend, Kelly, I don't know if you know, but they had the Good News Conference where 1,100 people, mm-hmm. it was sold out, gathered in Nashville. And I said, all these young people attending conferences, such as the one at Steubenville, but others around the country, I said, and besides that, it's not easy being a Catholic. I said, you have to, you can go to Mass as a non-Catholic, you can't receive the Eucharist. But in order to be in communion with the Church, you have to go through some pretty important steps. So it's, how could it be manufactured? I said, that's highly judgmental. And I said, you know what? I said, with all due respect to those who are saying that, I think deep down, they just can't understand, wherever they are, and we pray for them, why people would want to join the oppressive and the backward Catholic Church. So it's an opportunity, right. I said, for education and to show more love. But this is very exciting. Mm-hmm. There is something going on right now, I believe, in the Church.
There is something going on. And Teresa, for those you were speaking with and others who are listening, you know, I'd love for them to come to a Steubenville Youth Conference, to come to a Newman Guide College, come attend a daily Mass on campus, come attend a Eucharistic procession on campus, and see where the faith is alive and well, and see why it's so attractive to young people, and how that wholesome community they're finding is such a refreshment in such a digital AI-focused age. That true community, those true friendships, that's something that's timeless, that's always going to attract young people, and I think is becoming even more attractive in many ways today because of the highly secularized and digitized environment young people are living in.
And the emptiness, because they do everything the world says, and he was talking specifically about the Gen Zers, doing everything the world says, and they find out that they're not happy. Go figure. Kelly, great conversation. Yeah. We will pick up on some of these other stories next week, hopefully. And, of course, Kelly Solomon is with the Cardinal Newman Society. Every Tuesday, we discuss Newman Guide News. We'll be right back. Thank you so much for tuning into our number one of EWTN's Catholic Connection here on EWTN Global Catholic Radio on a Tuesday morning, September 8th already. Looking forward to our number two, which you may find on EWTN's Radio Extra. In our 2 Cents segment, we will look at this beautiful feast day today, the Nativity of Blessed Virgin Mary, and a beautiful summary that EWTN has sent out. If you sign up for our free e-blasts and newsletters, they're so informative, and they do it in a very simple Q&A format. So they ask the questions for you, and then they answer the questions for you. And there's usually a video attached to it, or at least some additional background information from the Church and from Scripture. So I'll share some of that with you on why we are celebrating Mary's birthday today. And then we're going to chat with Michael New. Michael, of course, is a regular guest here on Catholic Connection. He's a senior associate scholar at the Charlotte Lozier Institute. He's also an assistant professor of practice at the Catholic University of America. We're taking a look at how the pro-abortion industry is now admitting, go figure, that the laws passed the overturning of Roe v. Wade, the Dobbs laws, have not caused an increase in the deaths of pregnant women or a decrease in OBGYNs leaving pro-life states. Another myth, two myths that were put out there by the other side to promote fear. And we all know that the word fear is actually an acronym. False evidence appearing as real. And then we wrap up with a great discussion with our friend Barbara Harrington. She is a screenwriter, she's a producer, she's an educator, and she has been running programs for young screenwriters and those Catholics who want to do good in Hollywood. We're talking about some of her work this morning, a screenplay on her latest book, The Last Three Kings. We'll also have all the news for you and the weather. So it's going to be a great second hour. Hour number two of Catholic Connection, 2 Cents, talking about the Blessed Virgin Mary, always a wonderful topic. Michael knew about the impact, the truth in the impact of the laws post the overturning of Roe v. Wade. And then Barbara Harrington giving us some insight, not only in her screenplay, but she wants to talk about what's happening in Hollywood and some of the good that's being done. That's all coming up next. We'll be right back on EWTN Radio Extra. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
Feels like a Monday, but it's actually a Tuesday. Thank you for tuning in to our second hour of Catholic Connection here on EWTN's Radio Extra. Appreciate you joining us. What's coming up in hour number two? Well, being that it's a beautiful, beautiful feast day today, honoring our Mama Mary, Catholic Church celebrating the birth of the Blessed Virgin Mary on its traditional fixed date of September 8th, 9 months after the December 8th celebration of her Immaculate Conception as a child of Saints Joachim and Anne. Okay, so we will discuss with more detail and a wonderful clip, an old video that Richard found, my stellar producer, found of Mother Angelica talking about the importance of this feast day in the church and why we celebrate it. So we'll share that and some other background information for you, because it's always important for us to understand why the church does what she does and what is she doing when she chooses particular days to honor the saints, to honor Mama Mary and others in the church. So we'll discuss in our Two Cents segment. And then we are having our friend, of course, Michael New, joining us about the truth behind what actually happened versus what didn't happen, according to the pro-abortionists. They're now admitting that those Dobbs laws after the overturning of Roe v. Wade, guess what, have not caused an increase in the deaths of pregnant women or the decrease of OBGYNs packing up and leaving pro-life states. They said it was just going to be horrible. Women were going to be dying on the streets. One politician actually said that. Doctors are going to be packing up and fleeing. Nope, didn't happen. Reality happened, and we'll tell you all about it. And then we wrap up with Barbara Nicolosi Harrington, and she is going to be talking about her new screenplay based on her book, The Last Three Kings. But she'll also be talking about the latest in Hollywood and how many Christians are still having an impact. So it should be a very good discussion. So that is a lineup for hour number two here on Catholic Connection on EWTN Radio Extra. So there's a hurricane that's moving toward Hawaii. Hurricane Lowell is the name, and it's forecast to pass west of Kauai today, according to the National Weather Service, impacting such things as high surf and also causing heavy rain that could impact all of the Hawaiian islands. And so it's going to be pretty scary there for a while. We'll keep you updated. Then we have the heat issues that are facing us stateside. Sweltering heat remains across the South Central Plains in California and the lower middle Mississippi Valley, as well as in the Southwest this week with limited nighttime relief. 2 minutes past the hour, a lot of news to get through. So let's get started right now here on a Tuesday in hour number two of EWTN's Catholic Connection. Pope Leo returning to the Shrine of Our Lady of Good Counsel south of Rome last night to celebrate Mass on the eve of the Nativity of the Blessed Virgin Mary, inviting all Christians to contemplate Mary's quiet presence and become servants of peace. During his homily, the Holy Father said, "Let us allow peace to grow within us." Returning to the sanctuary southeast of Rome, the Holy Father recalling he had felt a deep desire to come there just days after his election to the papacy in May of last year. Mary, he said at the time, had accompanied him throughout his life with her maternal presence, with her wisdom, and with the example of her love for her son, the son who was always at the center of his faith, the Pope said. Now celebrating the vigil of Mary's birth, he said he was once again entrusting to Mary what is still born in this poor and magnificent humanity, fragile like a shoot, but a sign of God's faithfulness. The Pope's homily focusing on the apparent paradox of Mary's place in salvation history, a woman whose life changed the entire course of history, yet whose presence in the gospel is marked by simplicity and silence. Russia is now leaving the door open, it says, to new peace talks with Ukraine. Stefan Boss from Vatican News tells us this, following a weekend of intense American diplomacy, but still many obstacles remain to ending the war, now in its fifth year.
Moscow said Monday it does not rule out renewed peace talks involving Russia, Ukraine and the United States. Heard through an interpreter, Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov spoke after U.S. envoy Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner held talks with Russian President Vladimir Putin in Moscow and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in Kiev. Following their talks in Moscow, Kushner and Witkoff traveled to Kiev by train from Poland, with Zelensky saying Russian strikes had prevented them from flying into the Ukrainian capital. Russia and Ukraine had agreed to refrain from striking each other's capitals during the American delegation's visits. The Kremlin described Saturday's talks with Putin as highly useful, while the American envoys called their subsequent discussions with Zelensky encouraging.
In other news this morning, a mistrial formally declared on Friday in the Lindsey Clancy murder trial in Massachusetts. Plymouth County District Attorney Timothy Grew saying, so far, no decision has been made yet about retrying that case.
There'll be no decisions made today regarding that. I'm going to be meeting with our team, and we will address this case further at the appropriate time in the context of an official court proceeding.
Cruz also said after speaking with reporters on Friday that this is a clear-cut case.
The facts are Lindsey Clancy killed her three children, and the evidence suggested to us that she was in control of her actions when she committed those homicides.
The mistrial declaration coming after the defense's appeal to a higher court to block it was denied. The jury today telling the judge once again they were deadlocked, prompting the jury, actually the jury Friday, prompting the judge to declare the mistrial before giving the defense an honor to appeal it. Clancy did admit to killing her three children back in 2023, but did plead not guilty by reason of insanity, claiming she suffered from postpartum psychosis. Prosecutors arguing the killings, as you heard, were premeditated. A status hearing now set for September 29th. Former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani urging the current mayor of New York, Zohran Mamdani, not to attend Friday's 9/11 remembrance ceremony. Giuliani saying in an interview with Newsmax he is offended that Mamdani is coming, saying that the current mayor doesn't agree that September 11th was actually an Islamic terrorist attack on the U.S. Meanwhile, a petition circulated by some 9/11 victims' families urging the current mayor to reconsider has drawn 100,000 signatures. And Tammy Trujillo tells us a New York City firefighter has now died of World Trade Center-related illnesses just days before the 25th anniversary of the 9/11 terror attacks.
Retired FDNY Lieutenant Gerald Riley of Ladder 22 died last Thursday. The Uniformed Firefighters Association says Riley was a devoted husband, father, and grandfather and showed unwavering dedication during rescue and recovery operations at Ground Zero. He died at the age of 75. The Never Forget Project says that 343 firefighters were killed on 9/11. Over 100 have died of World Trade Center-related injuries or illness, and thousands more are now sick. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
Meanwhile, this year's remembrance ceremony in Lower Manhattan will include a new moment of silence and bell toll on what marks the 25th anniversary of the terrorist attacks. In the past, there's been six moments of silence during the ceremony, but 9/11 Memorial and Museum President Beth Hillman says there will be another one to honor the service and sacrifice of all those who have since passed away from 9/11-related health effects.
And that's many more than the people killed on 9/11 itself. It's an important opportunity for us to pull closer to us and pull to the 9/11 commemoration itself.
The added moment of silence happening after the reading of the names of the victims, tens of thousands of first responders, construction workers, and others have become ill, as you heard earlier in this newscast, with cancers and other health issues, and many have since died. One of the wealthiest school districts in New Jersey, in other news, is being sued. This over its school records gender and name change policy. The Chatham School District allowing a guidance counselor to decide whether and to what extent students' parents should be informed about their children's gender and name choices. That includes their decisions about which bathrooms and lockers they want to use. Moms for America, Moms for Liberty, and several parents of young girls are suing, claiming the parents' constitutional due process rights are being violated. Mountain Rescue Aspen says it has now responded to two climbing deaths near Aspen in less than a week. Chief Rescue Leader Jeff Edelson says the Elk Mountains are known for loose, unstable rock.
If we look back at our historical data, unfortunately, we do have a couple of deaths a year on average in our range. Sometimes they're clumped together like these were. Sometimes they're spread out through the summer.
A climber dying on Sunday after falling from Castle Peak just days after another climber was killed in a fall from Maroon Peak. The climber's name has not been released. The rescue officials are urging climbers to know their limits, prepare for changing conditions, and leave a detailed route plan with someone before heading into the backcountry. Mark Mayfield tells us the National Transportation Safety Board has recovered the flight data and audio recorders from that deadly plane crash at Miami's International Airport.
Speaking Monday from Miami, NTSB Chairwoman Jennifer Homendy said her agency is determined to get to the bottom of what happened.
We are deeply, deeply committed to our duty, our responsibilities to determine how this accident occurred, why it happened.
Five people were killed and five others injured when an Amazon cargo plane went off the runway while landing Sunday afternoon. The Boeing 767 was coming in from Puerto Rico. Homendy said it struck a van with several people inside, then struck a Toyota Corolla while sliding 1,500 feet past the paved surface. Homendy gave condolences to the families who lost their loved ones in the incident. I'm Mark Mayfield.
A coastal flood advisory remaining in place for large portions, as we mentioned, of Southern California. Over the weekend, multiple coastal communities inundated with seawater as the tail end of a tropical storm pushed waves into the shore. Powerful waves are now combining with high tides to cause minor flooding in various parts of California. That will be the case until late this evening. And it's primary day in New Hampshire. Voters heading to the polls deciding who moves forward in the races for Senate, House, and Governor. The Senate race is getting the most attention with Democratic Senator Gene Shaheen not seeking re-election, leaving that seat open. Congressman Chris Pappas emerging as a Democratic frontrunner, while John E. Sununu has the benefit of strong statewide name recognition in the Republican area of the state. Sarah Lee Kessler tells us about a flight attendant from Indiana who's being credited now with rescuing a baby on a plane bound from New Jersey to Michigan.
Monique Harris caught the two-month-old as she was slipping from her exhausted mother's lap midair last week on a United flight from Newark to Grand Rapids. Harris, who's in her 50s, not only had quick reflexes but lots of empathy, letting the new mom nap while she held the baby during the flight. A United passenger shot video, uploaded it to social media, and naturally, it's gone viral. Harris getting a lot of praise and United getting a lot of suggestions that she deserves a pay raise. I'm Sarah Lee Kessler.
A new survey showing 39% of men say they have tried a health or wellness trend after seeing it on social media. Dr. Pedik Bajcik with the Cleveland Clinic says it's very important for men to make sure the content they're consuming is credible, and they need to first check with a doctor.
We can help provide guidance on the right types of diet, the right types of exercise, and how to improve sleep, all of these things that are so important.
And the Cleveland Clinic study also showing about three-quarters of men are motivated to improve their health after seeing health content on the internet, and 44% say they have compared their body and overall health. And a new school year beginning today in Newark, where students will have a new cell phone ban policy in place. Students can carry their phones, but the Newark Board of Education releasing a video explaining they must be stored in pouches and remain off and away through the entire school day.
From the moment you hear the first bell in the morning to the time you hear the dismissal bell in the afternoon, you must keep any internet-enabled device completely turned off. Putting it on vibrate isn't good enough.
The phone rules are in response to a new state law requiring all schools to develop cell phone restriction policies for K through 12 students. When we come back, all about our feast today, celebrating the birth of Mama Mary with Mother Angelica and more. We'll be right back. Past the hour. Welcome back. 2 cents segment, Tease 2 cents more specifically. Hour number two of Catholic Connection, coast to coast and around the globe. This time on EWTN's Radio Extra. Big day in the One Holy Catholic and Apostolic Church today. Mama Mary's having a birthday. Tanta Gloriate. That's how you say it in Italian, or buon clapiano. Blessed Mother, we love you, and we are so grateful for all you do for us and the church. We have a big celebration today. Now, there is a beautiful story on EWTNnews.com. The Catholic Church celebrates the birth of the Blessed Virgin Mary on September 8th, 9 months after the December 8th celebration of her Immaculate Conception. The circumstances, and I'm reading right from this beautiful article that was put together by the EWTN News staff, of the Virgin Mary's infancy and early life are not directly recorded in the Bible. But other documents, legends, and traditions describing the circumstances of her birth are cited by some of the earliest Christian writers from the first centuries of the church. Now, these accounts, as the article explains, are not included in the canon of Scripture and thus lack authority, but they do reflect some of the church's beliefs about the birth of Mary. One such non-scriptural source is the early 2nd century Proto-Evangelium of James, an infancy gospel offering pious legends about Mary that nevertheless affirms some of the earliest teachings of the church on the Blessed Mother. It describes Mary's father, Joachim, as a wealthy member of one of the 12 tribes of Israel. He was deeply grieved along with his wife Anne by their childlessness, and he called to mind Abraham, the early Christian writing, saying that in the last day God gave him a son, Isaac. Joachim and Anne began to devote themselves extensively and rigorously to prayer and fasting, wondering whether their inability to conceive a child might signify God's displeasure with them. As it turned out, however, the couple was to be blessed even more abundantly than Abraham and Sarah, as an angel revealed to Anne when he appeared to her and prophesied that all generations would honor their future child. The Lord has heard your prayer, and you shall conceive and shall bring forth, and your seed shall be spoken of in all the world. Now, this can take us back to Scripture, right? In terms of all generations honoring Anne's future child, the Blessed Mother, as our own Lady, the Blessed Mother, the Virgin Mary, saying in the Gospel of Luke during the visitation, when she sees and goes to visit her cousin Elizabeth, all generation, her fiat, right, her Magnificat, all generations shall call me blessed, for the mighty has done great things for me, and holy is his name. Now, as we continue with this beautiful article, again on EWTNnews.com, after Mary's birth, according to the Proto-Evangelium of James, St. Anne made a sanctuary in the infant girl's room and allowed nothing common or unclean on account of the special holiness of the child. The same writing records that when she was a year old, her father made a great feast and invited the priests and the scribes and the elders and all the people of Israel. The Proto-Evangelium goes on to describe how Mary's parents, along with the temple priests, subsequently decided that she would be offered to God as a consecrated virgin for the rest of her life and enter a chaste marriage with Joseph the carpenter. St. Augustine, meanwhile, describing the birth of the Blessed Virgin Mary as an event of cosmic and historic significance and an appropriate prelude to the birth of Jesus Christ. She is a flower of the field from whom bloomed the precious lily of the valley. Isn't that a great quote? The 4th century bishop, whose theology profoundly shaped the Western Church's understanding of sin and human nature, affirmed through her birth, he said, the nature inherited from our first parents is now changed. There is so much information and great research and work that's been done on all of our saints, and especially on our Queen Mother, the Blessed Mother, our spiritual mom, Mary, the Mother of the Church, a Theotokos, the God-bearer. And we don't have to be afraid if a non-Catholic or a former Catholic talks to us about, quote-unquote, worshiping Mary. We don't worship Mary. Mary intercedes for us like a good mom. She prays for us. She takes our concerns to God, to her son Jesus. I saw a great clip, I forget where it was, I think it was on TikTok, of Chris Stefanik, of course, from EWTN, a great apologetic video, very short but very good, where he had a Lutheran friend saying, "You Catholics, you guys and the saints and Mary, why don't you just concentrate on Jesus?" And I thought he gave a great analogy and a great response. Why wouldn't the Father want us to love the Mother and our brothers and sisters? We're a family. If we truly are a Christian family, we call each other, "Hey, brother, hey, sister." The saints are our brothers and sisters in heaven. Our Blessed Mother is our mother. So we should be very proud of our family, especially in the one Holy Catholic and Apostolic Church. And our very own Mother Angelica, our founders of EWTN, and my terrific producer, Richard, found this for me today. The network is releasing this really beautiful clip of Mother talking about the strength and the beauty of Mama Mary. Take a listen.
I know some of you dislike Our Lady. I always feel bad about that. But you don't always think of what she did for you. She stood. How would you feel as a mother or even a father to have your son go through all of that and to know it was for people who perhaps didn't care or didn't understand? I mean, you can't spend Holy Week without being just so impressed with the strength of Mary and her willingness to accept the will of God so perfect. You know, some of you dislike Our Lady. I always feel bad about that, but you don't always.
A brief clip from Mother Angelica talking about the Blessed Virgin Mary and how beautiful she is and how strong she is, even though, as the Holy Father said in his statement at the Vigil Mass last night, that she was so important in salvation history, this huge figure, as Augustine mentioned, but she is so peaceful and so quiet in terms of the way she carries herself. But she always has a great message. Every time she appears in all the approved apparitions, she's reminding us of how she's not only the Theotokos, the God-bearer, the Mother of God, but she's our mother. And how about what she says to St. Juan Diego and Guadalupe, right? On Tepeyac Hill. Don't you know that I am your mother? She asked him that question. She is our mother, the Blessed Virgin Mary. If she is a mother of God, the God-bearer, how could she not be our mother? Right? Jesus gives her to us on the cross. Son, behold your mother. Woman, behold your son. That wasn't just for St. John, who was there at the crucifixion. That is for all of us. Scripture says, after Jesus dies, of course, resurrected, ascended into heaven, the Blessed Mother goes to live with John. And John takes her into his home. So is Jesus telling us from the cross, behold your mother, and then St. John takes her into his home and cares for her, aren't we supposed to do the same thing? Unfortunately, there's still a lot out there with people rejecting what the Catholic Church teaches in terms of Mary and the saints. But all you have to do is read what the Church and the great saints such as Augustine and others have to say about it to understand and be able to lovingly defend your faith, defend Mary, defend devotion to the saints, veneration of relics, the rosary, which is nothing but scriptural, right? Because the Our Father, the two main prayers, the Lord's Prayer and the Hail Mary are right from Scripture. And then each decade is a reflection of a period of our Lord's life. This is an opportunity on a feast day such as this to learn more about our faith. Not to win an argument, but to encourage yourself, to affirm our beliefs, to understand them more deeply, and to be able to witness to them. You don't have to hit people over the head with the catechism or the Bible. But for example, someone asked me at the conference last week about relics. I don't get relics. And I said, well, okay. Do you have a picture in your house of a late loved one? Do you have an item of their clothing or maybe baby shoes from your child? Relics are reminding us of what that person gave to us in our lives, and the saints even more so. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. Amen. We'll be right back. Minutes past the hour. It is a Tuesday, September 8th. Great to be with you. Great to have Michael New back with us. He is with the Charlotte Lozier Institute, Catholic University. He writes frequently for a number of publications, including National Review, and he sent us an interesting story about which he also wrote. And this is this whole fear factor from the left after Dobbs laws, you know, after Roe v. Wade was overturned, the sky was going to fall, women were going to drop dead on the streets, pro-life, or actually doctors are going to run from pro-life states. What a shocker. It didn't happen. There's all kinds of stories out there. National Right to Life has a piece on it, as has Catholic Vote. But Michael, I want to get your expertise on it because you also wrote a piece and sent it to us. This just doesn't surprise me. What bothers me is that there was so much sensationalism after Roe v. Wade was overturned from the left about what was going to happen. And then, you know, years later, it doesn't happen. And so this story is just kind of, you know, they want it to go away. What did you learn in terms of what actually happened versus what the left said was going to happen? Thanks for joining us.
Right. The left predicted a public health disaster after Dobbs. They said that maternal mortality will skyrocket, if mortality will skyrocket, that OBGYNs will leave pro-life states, and women won't be able to get the medical care they need. And we know none of that's really happened. What is interesting is the other side is beginning to admit this. There's someone named Dr. David Hackney, who is a professor of reproductive biology at Case Western University in Ohio. And he wrote an op-ed for Stat News. He admits that many of the predictions that his ideological team made were untrue. I mean, Dr. Hackney supports legal abortion. You know, he testified against the Ohio Heartbeat Act. He supported Issue 1, which plays legal abortion, Ohio State Constitution. He's a very vocal, very strong proponent of legal abortion. And he admits in this op-ed that we were wrong, that his team was wrong, that maternal mortality rates have not, in fact, gone up, that OBGYNs are not leaving pro-life states, and that people who support legal abortion should try to make arguments based on bodily autonomy and freedom rather than arguing it's going to be a public health disaster.
Why do you think he wrote about this? I mean, it's one thing to be interviewed. It's another thing to write an op-ed on it.
Yeah, it's very puzzling. I'm kind of, I don't know why he would, unless he has very strong beliefs that his ideological team does better when they talk about, freedom and bodily autonomy rather than public health. Here, I think he's totally wrong. I would argue that people support legal abortion love to talk about public health because they get articles published in journals that are edited by supporters of legal abortion, that are uncritically reported on by media outlets support abortion, and that when they do academic studies, people like me don't get much chance to comment one way or the other. If they want to talk about philosophy and theology, I say bring it on. Our apologetics are great. Biology shows very clearly, life begins at conception. Our apologetics are very strong. If they want to have this argument with us on philosophical or theological grounds, I am not going to lose any sleep. We will win.
So how is this information being received, in addition, especially an op-ed by someone who's, pro-abortion? What is the left saying about this?
I don't know. I mean, so far as I can see, I have not seen our opponents say much about this one way or the other. I mean, it appeared in an outlet called statnews.com, which has some visibility, but it's not the New York Times. It's not USA Today. If something like this had really been published in one of the, say, four or five newspapers that really is read nationwide and kind of drives, commentary, might have been different. So it just seems that, insofar as I can see, most people on David Hackney's team are just by and large ignoring this op-ed.
Yeah. To me, it's frustrating because this was such a huge story after Dobbs. You were on the program, as a matter of fact, taking a look at all this fear-mongering and the fear factor that the left, I mean, they're experts at doing this. And then this comes out several years later. And obviously, as you mentioned, you've written about it. There was an op-ed. There were other people writing about it, but mostly in Catholic and other pro-life circles. But this story, this big story, that what they said would happen, and I think it was Nancy Pelosi who said that women are going to be dying on the streets after the overturning of Roe v. Wade, none of that happened. And so, but it goes really undiscussed for the most part. Isn't that frustrating to you? It's frustrating to me.
It's frustrating. And the thing is that the other side should know better. I mean, there are very good public health outcomes in a lot of countries with good pro-life laws. Poland, which really, put some limits on abortion at the end of the Cold War. They have one of the lowest, if not the lowest, maternal mortality rate in the entire world, or definitely among, European countries. If you look at, Ireland, before they legalized abortion, 2016, 2017, their public health outcomes are better than the outcomes in, say, England and Wales and Scotland. So this really should not have been a surprise. And if you just look at simply, the data that the CDC releases on maternal mortality, it's gone down a lot since Dobbs. It's not hard to find this data. Anyone who spends 10 minutes online can see a downward trajectory since Dobbs. So it's frustrating the media doesn't report on this. Thankfully, we have National Review. We have shows like this. We always do our best to penetrate the mainstream media, but it is tough.
I can't remember if we had you on after the signing of that horrible legislation by the Massachusetts governor that allows for abortions up to birth, and seeing those that crowd filled with mostly women cheering and clapping once she signed it. And then she claims that she's a Catholic, but it's fine for her to support and sign that piece of legislation. But what are your thoughts as we go into the midterms, not too far from now? Where are the pro-life issues? What are we looking at in terms of pro-life candidates, do you think, Michael?
Well, I think it's important that we keep electing pro-life candidates at all levels of government. Obviously, in blue states, it's tricky, like Massachusetts, but pro-lifers are pushing back. They're going to try to put something on the ballot to try to put legal protections in for preborn children, you know, late in gestation. So they are going to try to use direct democracy to repeal, you know, what just happened in Massachusetts. You know, in a lot of states, pro-lifers can still do a lot of good. You know, here at the federal level, we have the 50th anniversary of the Hyde Amendment coming up in a few short weeks. It's going to be September 30th. You know, one thing we've done well at the federal level is keeping the federal government out of the business of funding elective abortion through Medicaid, and that needs to continue. But it's only going to continue if we keep letting pro-life people to Congress. So, you know, there are good laws in place that need to be protected. You know, one sad thing we see in a lot of blue states like Massachusetts is that laws are becoming more permissive. You know, before even expanding access to abortion the way they did, Massachusetts weakened its parental involvement law. Illinois repealed its pro-life parental involvement law. Virginia repealed a waiting period in informed consent law. Since about 2017, 2018, about seven state Medicaid programs have started paying for elective abortion. So, you know, we have our work cut out for us, you know, but, you know, bad things, you know, will happen if the other side wins. And, you know, when our team does win, you know, they can stop these bad things from happening and pass certain bills that actually will build a culture of life.
And the Charlotte Lozier Institute has such great information, too. There's a whole section on In the News, and there's different opportunities to really study these issues on your website at thecharlottelozierinstitute.org. So, Michael, what are you writing about next in the near future? What can we expect?
Well, big thing for me is the 50th anniversary of the Hyde Amendment. You know, in 1976, we had our great Congressman Henry Hyde, who passed an important piece of legislation that prevents the federal government from paying for elective abortions through Medicaid. It's important for a variety of reasons. It was a good political win. I would say it was the first big political win the pro-life movement had since Roe. It was a good legal judicial win. It was appealed. The Supreme Court upheld the Hyde Amendment in 1980. And from a policy perspective, it saved a lot of lives. You know, there's a very strong body of research that shows once you defund abortion, lives are saved. And, you know, our efforts show that, you know, over 2 million lives have been saved since Hyde. I'll have some new estimates out by the end of the month. So, anniversary for us to celebrate.
Great. We'll look forward to that. Michael New from, of course, the Charlotte Lozier Institute, Catholic University of America, and National Review. Marvin Nicolosi Harrington up next. So it's great to have Dr. Barbara Nicolosi back on the program. We go way back, and we've spoken together at conferences, and I love her approach to the culture. She says, don't be afraid of it. Go out there and influence it well and wisely. And she does just that. She has worked in the L.A.-based entertainment industry, God love her, for more than 23 years as a screenwriter, a script analyst, production company executive, and a consultant on a number of major projects, including The Passion of the Christ, the theatrical feature Reagan 2024, The Last Supper 2025, as well as a number of important and prominent TV shows. I could go on, but she also does a lot of work with young people who are interested in working in Hollywood, especially those who want to produce quality productions. That's why I love what she does, because both of us come at this from the attitude of don't run away from it, try to make a difference, and she does just that. So she has a latest book called The Last Three Kings. And so, Barbara, are you working on making this into a screenplay? This is very exciting. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
In a while, well, but it's nice to catch up. Yeah,
yes.
Actually, I started, this book is derived from the screenplay. So a few years ago, I said, you know, it's time for a new Christmas classic. And so I spent about 2 years kind of trying to come up with what that would look like, especially from me and my perspective. And then I got this idea on Epiphany, Feast of Epiphany, and it popped into my head. Why don't we do the real journey of the kings and what it cost them? So then I started doing research it's kind of Indiana Jones meets the Nativity, but I think it's got it's a beautiful project. So Yeah, it's been out there in screenplay form, winning at many festivals. So I think I'm up to 10 festivals. I've won different awards for it. But, you know, it's an expensive movie, and the Christian side, you know, they never want to invest real money in movies. So it's tricky getting a hearing for it. But anyway, and so then my friend said, why don't you put this out as a book? It's such a great story. And so I did, and it's been doing pretty well, and I'm very kind of happy. And now I'm working on my second one, which is based on my screenplay on St. Philomena and Diocletian and the persecution of the church. So that one should be out in a few months, too.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So tell us about the research you did for The Last Three Kings and what you discovered that may have surprised you.
You know, I think the main thing for me was just researching what it was to cross the desert.
Uh-huh.
A journey of at least 700 miles, maybe as much as 1,100. But to cross the desert in a caravan, following a star, that is a huge, huge undertaking. It would be going on a 700-mile trek in a car would be a thing, but imagine doing it in a camel, you know. So, yeah, they encounter all manner of, sandstorms and bandits and scorpions and things like that. You can just, you can presume they were hungry and cold. And one of the things that informed this was one of my trips to Israel. I ended up spending 4 days in the desert on a camel. We went out.
Oh, did you actually? Because I've been to the Holy Land many times, but I never did that. I just have to admit, I don't think I could
do
it.
I didn't want to do it, but I was kind of dragged by my friends. And I have to say, I was freezing to death and then hungry and, all these things. And you were like, thank God I can get back into civilization. But, it's no joke of the danger of doing this thing. And the idea that they are, they're following a star. They're being called by this. And so my main story is Melchior, this, astronomer, his prince, and he's being led out of cynicism and out of kind of, just disbelief into, what could this be? And that to me seems to be like a very modern story in a lot of ways. But it's been a lot of fun and people really like it. So
I think it's really important to do this because we see things, read things in scripture, especially about, the different narratives of the nativity. And we think, oh, this just happened. They showed up and they brought the gifts and this is great. They made a little trip. They saw the star. I was just talking a few weeks ago and we had the verse from, Matthew 16:18, when Jesus took the apostles up to Caesarea Philippi. We think, up to Caesarea Philippi. But if you've been there, you know how far it is. Between obviously the Nazarene area up to Caesarea Philippi. And it was a walk that would have taken them at least a day, a full day, if not longer. We just kind of say, this kind of happened because it did happen, but not thinking about the details. So this is a great way really to dive into that experience, I think.
Yeah, no. And I think it's another way to come at the, because Melchior is having these visions of Christmas, of the nativity and of basically a young Hebrew maiden who's going through all these things somewhere. And it's I put that into because the scriptures don't say a lot about them. It's like they showed up, they brought these very, very telling gifts, and then that's it. So this is a fleshing that out in the spirit of the chosen, which has given us permission to really use our imaginations. But there's nothing anti-scriptural in it. But I think that, the idea of kind of building a narrative around this journey, and because they weren't traveling for nothing. They were in search of, as they told Herod, the new king. And so turns out that Persia had a tradition that there was going to be a man, God, who was going to unite, men and God together. And it's on the tablets of Gudea, which had been around for like 700 years before Jesus. So idea was deeply embedded in ancient cultures. The Holy Spirit had been preparing people, and that's why, it's called The Last Three Kings, because basically in my story, 200 people set out, but only three make it all the way. And it's basically all the reasons people walk away from God. It's taking too long. It's too cold. Why aren't you helping me? Why aren't you, why aren't you showing up? And so basically at the end, the three of them make it together. So anyway, that's my story, but it's hopefully, we'll see it on the big screen someday. But until now, I think it's a great read for Christmas.
So who did the cover? Because the cover is gorgeous.
Me and ChatGPT.
Okay.
But, you know, it was about a week of work because the neat thing is, you know, I've done this kind of thing with human designers, you know, and it takes, you give them notes and then it takes 8 days to get the changes. But in ChatGPT, it takes 10 minutes and you can, you know, tell it, make it lighter, make it, you know, put some red in there, you know, add some things and it will. It's just astounding, the technology. And, you know, the Pope said recently in his document, AI is, you know, could be problematic and
right.
will be problematic. But at the same time, it offers so much potential, you know, in terms of creativity. And I think people working with it, it's just fantastic. You know, it changes many, many things and just reduces so much time. So anyway, mm-hmm. I used it to make the cover thinking I was going to give it to a, you know, an actual artist afterwards and say, but then I was like, I like it.
No, it's very beautiful. It's really pretty. Mm-hmm. Talking with Dr. Barbara Nicolosi about her latest book, The Last Three Kings, a great read for Christmas, for Advent, for Epiphany, especially Epiphany, because we focus on the kings during Epiphany. Where can we find the book before we move on? With
oh, it's on Amazon, on Kindle, and as a paperback. And self-published, but it was, you know, that was the easiest way to go for me to get it out there fast. So, but yeah, so just anybody Google Last Three Kings on Amazon, it'll come up.
So let me ask you, being that you're an expert in the culture, especially films and Hollywood, how do you think we're doing this year, last year, in terms of, is there any kind of a shift going on in Hollywood, so to speak?
We're actually in the middle of probably the biggest shift in the history of Hollywood since it started. The industry is not going to come out of this at all. It's not coming back. The American-based Hollywood entertainment industry is going away. And, you know, they had a fluke where Spider-Man saved theaters and the box office this year. But the truth is the box office has been just crashing. The production costs have been exceeding the box office by like $200 billion a year for the last few years. It's an unsustainable thing. There's no money in the business anymore. It's been all bought out by, multi-global corporations who don't really care about movies. It's a massive shift happening. America has really lost its dominance, and it continues to commit suicide. You know, these DEI requirements that are just ruining filmmaking in so many ways, but the unions and the production costs ballooning. And anyway, I think the good news for us Christians is I actually think this is good news for faith-based filmmakers because it takes all the power away from the few that used to be the gatekeepers. And now you can make something and they're so desperate for content, you can just say, we got a movie in the can, and they'll air it and you'll get distribution. So it's a good moment, but unfortunately, we still don't have our storytelling game together on the Christian side. The scripts I read are mostly dreadful still, which blows my mind. You know, how have we not learned how to do this?
Yeah, how are they dreadful? But, I agree with you on this, and we've had this conversation. Yeah. What are you seeing in some of these scripts that are
well,
not,
a lot of times,
you know,
you know, you
work?
Take a project, you know, like there's one that came out a couple of years ago. You know, I won't say which one, but, you know, made by a bunch of Catholics about a saint, but it didn't have a discernible theme, really, you know, so no theme, no real, what we call character development, no real arc of transformation where we're, you know, kind of living with the character through the struggle that transforms them. This just basic storytelling stuff goes back to Aristotle. And yet I find over and over on our side, just, you know, no cognizance at all of what a good story is. You know, I'm actually giving a course next month on called Beginnings, Middles, and Ends, because I'm so sick of reading movies from us that don't understand these parts. You know, most of us just, they stop, but they don't end. You know, they don't know the difference. And so anyway, it's basic story flaws that go back to Aristotle. We still haven't figured out how to adapt, you know, to take these into consideration for and use modern media.
Yeah.
So our production looks better. Everything looks so much better now. Thank you, Chosen. Thank you, you know, all these other little projects that have been going. But in the end, they don't come. A lot of them don't amount to much. I'm not saying that The Chosen. I think it's different in a lot of ways. But I think that for the most part, our projects, they don't sting hearts, you know?
It's a great point.
They don't, you know? And so, it's like, why not? Why not? And there's a whole bunch of reasons for that. You know, I could probably talk about that for a week.
We'll just have to be back. One of the things that, and you and I have talked about this, that would drive me nuts was some of the films that would come out, like the past 10 to 15 years, some of these films that don't do very well at the box office, they do well in evangelical circles, Catholic circles, but they were so corny. The acting was so bad. Yeah. There was one film, I'm not going to mention it. I actually was on a plane going to a speaking engagement, and I took off my headset and slammed it on the tray because I was so mad. The storyline, what they were trying to express was a great story, but the acting was so corny, and it was so badly produced. And you and I, being in media, it just drives me crazy. I just don't understand why they think stuff like that is going to sell.
No, I don't. I mean, they're selling to the niche, which is smaller and smaller all the time, and they know the niche will forgive them, you know, the niche audience. But you're right. I mean, my biggest reaction to most faith-based projects that I look at is, have you never seen a movie before?
because, really? What are you thinking? Barb, we're out of time. I've got to have you back on, but congrats on the book. I'd love to have you back on, especially during Epiphany, to talk about The Last Three Kings. It's available on Amazon and other sources from Barbara Nicolosi. I want to grab a copy. We'll be right back.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Yeah, Barbara Nicolosi is terrific. She is very involved in a program called Act One, which was helping young people, faith-based people in Hollywood interested in going into the industry, teaching them about screenplay writing and the importance of a story. And that's what I like about her, and helping people tell stories, because you know what? Our Lord was the greatest motivational speaker ever. Go figure, he's God. But you know what I'm saying? He was able to relate to people. He used analogies all the time. And he was able to tell a story from beginning to end. Again, go figure, he's God. But really, this book is beautiful. I love the cover. The Last Three Kings, A Christmas Adventure. And I know it's only September, but before we know it, we'll be in that season again. All right. So coming up tomorrow, it is a Wednesday. So, of course, we are working on getting Joni on with us, Joan's Rome. But the thing is she is out in California, visiting her beautiful sister, who I had the opportunity to meet a couple of years ago when I was in Rome with Deacon Dom, and her sister was there as well. Her sister was actually doing a cruise, and she stopped in to see Joni when the cruise stopped in the Rome area. And now Joan's doing that. Her and her sister are actually going on a cruise. So she's coming back to Italy, flying back to Rome, she told me, on the 29th. So we're working on getting her. If not, we will have much to discuss on a Wednesday, of course. Hopefully you can stay tuned. And again, I really want to encourage you to do some homework today, to ask our Blessed Mother, our beautiful Mama Mary, as I call her, to help you understand her role in salvation. That is an endless topic, a beautiful topic about which we still have much to learn, but it's a beautiful thing. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and for our death. Amen. Talk to you tomorrow. Ciao, ciao.